you can play this game. Ben Crenshaw says that in golf, you take the lies as they come. Take the bad bounces with the good. Have you ever hit a terrible drive and then followed it with a miraculous recovery shot, out of the trees, landing the ball on the green? Don't act surprised when you do something well, and when you're struggling, don't let others know it. Maintain the warrior mentality. Stand tall, even if you feel you are coming apart on the inside, and carry yourself in a confident way. All performers can act themselves into a way of thinking just as they can think themselves into a way of acting. Mental attitude is always important. As a player, Dave Winfield, a member of the 3,000 Hits Club, knew that what he thought affected how he felt, and how he felt affected how he performed. Sometimes you have to say to yourself that you're going to have fun and feel good before you go out there, Winfield said. Normally, you have fun after you do well, but I wanted to have fun before I did well. And that helped. To perform consistently, you must prepare consistently. Act the way you want to become until you become the way you act. Inner excellence. The quality of a person's life is in direct proportion to their commitment to excellence, regardless of their chosen field. Vince Lombardi. My baseball career was a long, long initiation into a single secret. At the heart of all things is love. Sadaharu Oh. Early in his career, Shaquille O'Neal and his United States teammates traveled to Athens, Greece, to compete in the World University Games. A writer asked the 7-foot-1 center if, during his visit, he had checked out the Parthenon. "No," O'Neal replied. "I haven't been to all the clubs yet." Since that time, the world has seen basketball's man-child mature as an athlete and a person. Shaq's biggest growth spurt came at age 28, during his 8th pro season, when he led the league in scoring, finished 2nd in rebounding, placed 3rd in blocked shots, and led the Los Angeles Lakers to a league-best 67-15 record and the National Basketball Association championship. During the season, O'Neal thought of a boat trip in Montana he took with his uncle the previous summer. Shaq knew his new coach, Phil Jackson, had a vacation residence near the river, and, during the trip, he found it. In a window overlooking a dock, O'Neal spotted the championship trophies that Jackson's Chicago Bulls teams had won. 6 gold balls, O'Neal recalled, gleaming in the sunlight. They blinded me. In truth, their sparkle opened his eyes. On the day he received his own shiny trophy, the 1999-2000 NBA Most Valuable Player Award, the most dominating player in the game said he wanted to be nicknamed Big Aristotle because, in his words, it was Aristotle who said, "Excellence is not a singular act, but a habit. You are what you repeatedly do." Obviously, not everyone who listens to this audiobook is going to become a world-class athlete, like those quoted here. But each of us can be an MVP, a most valuable person. It doesn't take exceptional talent, education, or wealth to become an MVP. One becomes an MVP by achieving excellence within. Inner excellence is a way of thinking and a way of acting. It is a quality of mind. A mentality that says, no matter how difficult things become, you are responsible and accountable for your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Inner excellence is staying positive in negative situations, and it is dealing with adversity in an optimistic way. It is finding love and joy in what you do and remaining steadfastly committed to your goals, values, and dreams. It's staying cool when the heat is on. People with inner excellence look at competition as a challenge. They are motivated by a desire to succeed rather than by a fear of failure. They possess an unconditional high self-esteem and self-image. They have a can-do attitude and a will to prepare to win. They believe the harder they work, the harder it is to surrender. They don't quit or play the blame game, and they look after the smallest detail to go the extra mile. They are big enough to back down from trouble and strong enough to be kind, fair, and honest. Excellence goes beyond winning and losing. Inner excellence can't be taken away by a referee or an opponent or the final tick of a scoreboard clock. Western society is externally oriented. We're always going outside of ourselves to find validation and heroes and to measure success. We look outside for what only can be found inside. An MVP works on the inside, knowing that it will show on the outside. Let's review 10 qualities of inner excellence. The person who is a winner within has a dream. Eleanor Roosevelt said the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. Remember Dwight Smith's sensory-rich dream of playing for the Chicago Cubs? Imagination is like life's previews of coming attractions. Pursue your dream. Turn that dream into action through goal setting. Commitment. MVPs are committed to their goals. They live their lives on purpose. They are Ted Williams as a boy, wishing upon a star and dedicating himself to reaching that sky's-the-limit goal of someday being known and honored as the best hitter ever to play the game. I hated every minute of training, Muhammad Ali said, but I told myself, don't quit. Suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion. Joe Frazier, Ali's opponent in 3 epic bouts, said, you can map out a fight plan or a life plan, but when the action starts, it may not go the way you planned, and you're down to your reflexes, your training. That's where your road work shows. If you cheated on that in the dark of morning, you're getting found out now under the bright lights. Responsibility. Those who achieve inner excellence are response-able. They don't let what they can't do interfere with what they can do. Like Nota Begay, they take responsibility for themselves and their actions. There is a footnote to the story about losing my job with the NFL Cardinals. After Buddy Ryan was fired, after only 2 seasons, the organization invited me back. If I hadn't swallowed my anger and disappointment, if I had burned my bridges, that probably wouldn't have happened. Openness to learning and growing. An MVP turns weaknesses into strength. Remember from Mr. Baseball the Japanese word kaizen, which means constant daily improvement? Learn how to play with the paradoxes of sports. We don't grow old. We get old by not growing. Optimism. A positive mental attitude is essential to becoming the hero that is within you. Chris Chandler could have quit football, but he never lost faith in himself. An optimistic spirit helped Andre Agassi climb from the bottom of the world rankings to number 1 in 1999. I've always learned so much more from my downs than my ups, Agassi said. They're really who I am. Self-confidence. No one can outperform his or her self-image. Athletes with inner excellence, like Tiger Woods, believe in themselves and their abilities. They know how to do within when they're doing without. Part of responsibility psychology is knowing that no one can take away your self-esteem without your permission. Have the courage to grow up and fulfill your potential. Emotional control. In coaching life skills to professional athletes, I am careful not to come off sounding judgmental. Rather than make accusations, I pose questions. Do you think that was appropriate? Does thinking like that serve you well? Do you think that was a real mature thing to do? The adversity quotient. An MVP looks at obstacles as opportunities and views setbacks as springboards for comebacks. MVPs see stumbling blocks as stepping stones. Keep your head up, Paul Bear Bryant advised his college players. Act like a champion. Those with inner excellence possess the backbone of character. They practice good sportsmanship. Success without honor, Joe Paterno said, is an unseasoned dish. It will satisfy your hunger, but it won't taste good. Former coach Gene Stallings said you can't go wrong by doing right. While that may sound trite, it's true. Pick people up, don't put them down. Walk your talk, live by your principles. If you don't stand for something, you can fall for anything. If you stay in the middle of the road, the chances of getting hit are doubled. An MVP is persistent and patient. Don't give up on your dream. Don't let others dissuade you. Hang out with people who stoke your fire, not soak your fire. When times are good, be grateful. And when times are bad, be graceful. Working on the inside shows on the outside. What lies ahead of us or behind us is of little matter to what lies within us. The hero within. Every time your back is against the wall, there is only one person that can help you, and that's you. It comes from the inside. Pat Riley. It's not the size of a man, but the size of his heart that matters. Evander Holyfield. During the 1998 WNBA Finals against Houston, I walked into the Phoenix Mercury locker room before the game. Written on the chalkboard of the club that would fall one shot short of winning the title was a quotation from Ralph Waldo Emerson. A hero is no braver than the ordinary person. He is just braver 5 minutes longer. Sports is more than a contest of physical ability. As the ancient Greeks knew, sports also test courage, which comes from the Latin word meaning heart, and it's the human heart where the hero within us lives. The rich tapestry of sports is woven with the threads of heroes. Playing from the heart, people overcome adversity, beat the odds, or take their game to a new level. Some stories read like fairy tales. Cinderella stories, we call them. In 1995, Kurt Warner was bagging groceries in Iowa for $5.50 an hour. 5 years later, he earned the National Football League's Most Valuable Player Award and led his team to victory in the Super Bowl. His bags-to-riches story is as inspiring as the song I play for athletes at the end of every training session. The song, by Mariah Carey, is titled Hero. Bernard Malamud, author of The Natural, said, "Without heroes, the rest of us don't know how far we can go in life." If I can be a source of hope to anybody, Warner said, after being named the Super Bowl MVP, I'm proud to be a part of it. Competitive sports can bring out the best in people. Instead of playing small, they overcome their self-doubts and fears. They let their light shine. They find courage, which is the opposite of discourage, and tap into their reservoir of potential. Reflect a moment. Can you remember a time when you were a hero? When you showed heart, courage, and fearlessness that maybe you didn't think you had? I like what Dr. Thad Bell had to say. An assistant dean at the University of South Carolina Medical School, Bell was at one time the world's fastest human over the age of 40. You can rise above almost any obstacle if you're willing to work hard and believe that you can do it, he said. I want everyone to remember that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. There is no mold from which heroes are formed. They come in all sizes, all shapes, all ages, and all walks of life. During a discouraging time in my career, I saw a television interview with an Olympic hopeful who had lost a leg in a car accident. After grieving, she said she decided to become the best one-legged skier in the world. I didn't feel so sorry for myself anymore. Gene Driscoll is a 6-time Boston Marathon winner in the wheelchair division. In the book, A Hero in Every Heart, Gene describes jogging with President Clinton at his invitation. "He told me that I have the best-looking arms in America," Driscoll said. In fact, when he gave me his autograph, he wrote, "To Gene, the best-looking arms in America." Some people think that successful persons are born that way. I'm here to tell you that a champion is someone who has fallen off the horse 12 times and gotten back on the horse 12 times. Successful people never give up. Most heroes don't make the nightly television newscast or appear on the sports page. The world doesn't hear about the spirit of folks like Elwood Ware. The 70-year-old farmer fell out of a pecan tree. When his son found him 4 hours later, Ware was unconscious. He had broken his leg and 5 ribs. The farmer spent 6 months on crutches, but neither Mr. Ware's age nor the hitch in his get-along mattered when he picked up a discus at the Texas Senior Games and threw it as far as he could. "It didn't matter if I won," the septuagenarian said, showing off his silver medal. "Thing is, I tried it." Sis Warnke, a retired school teacher, took up running after turning 62. At age 78, the grandmother from Las Cruces, New Mexico, showed up at the Arizona Senior Olympics wearing a pair of sneakers and a cap that spoke of her spirit and good humor. "Get even," the words said. "Live long enough to be a problem to your kids." Sis ran the 440, the 880, and the 1500-meter races. Before Paul Westfall became an NBA coach, he took a job at Southwestern College, a small Bible school in Phoenix. The school didn't have a gym. When Westfall interviewed for the position, he asked the president if the school had any players. The president smiled and told Westfall he had passed them in the lobby. "I thought that was the tennis team," Westfall recalled. "They were all 5'10" white guys. One of them was a substitute named Tim Fultz." Fultz made the team for 2 reasons. First, Westfall didn't cut a player if he worked hard, and no one practiced harder than Tim. Also, the team needed transportation, and Fultz had a car, a beat-up bomb. Southwestern's season came down to a rematch against Arizona College of the Bible. A victory would send the Eagles into the national tournament. Late in the game, 2 of Westfall's starters fouled out. With 40 seconds left, the coach had no choice but to send in Fultz. As expected, the other team immediately fouled the inexperienced substitute, putting him at the line. Fultz missed both free throws. Fouled again, he missed 2 more. With 10 seconds left and Southwestern's lead cut to 3 points, guess who got fouled again? Fultz stepped to the line, heart pounding. First shot, good. Second one, swish. That night, the team carried the unlikely hero off the court on its shoulders as players and fans chanted his name. A minister's son, the young man later became a missionary in Zaire. While roofing a new church, he fell 35 feet and later died. Tim Fultz's heart was transplanted and now beats in the chest of an African man. The world of sports reveals many heroes. So does everyday life. It takes courage to grow up and reach your full potential. The well-played game. Sports can do so much. It's given me confidence, self-esteem, discipline, and motivation. Mia Hamm. Successful competitors want to win. Head cases want to win at all costs. Nancy Lopez. The late Tom Landry, former coach of the Dallas Cowboys, said sports are a great teacher. I wholeheartedly agree. The world of sports is both a classroom and a laboratory. Through competition, we learn from a young age the value of training, practice, and discipline, as well as the meaning of fair play. Sports teach us how to persevere, how to deal with adversity, how to become part of a single heartbeat that defines a team. Sports teach lessons in leadership, respect, and courage. In sports, unlike other more vague areas of life, there is a scoreboard, time limits, rules, and a level playing field. When Jackie Robinson broke the color line in Major League Baseball, former executive Branch Rickey reminded the future star that a baseball box score is democratic. It doesn't tell how big you are, what church you attend, what color you are, or how your father voted in the last election. It just tells what kind of baseball player you were on that particular day. Runner George A. Sheehan compared sports to the theater. Where sinner can turn saint and a common man can become an uncommon hero, sport is singularly able to give us peak experiences where we feel completely one with the world and transcend all conflicts as we finally become our own potential. At the recreational level, sports are about doing your best and having fun. Unfortunately, coaches, parents, and even young athletes who take their cues from adults often forget the purpose of competition. They look at professional sports, which is a business. Winning and losing translates into dollars and cents, and lose perspective. Youth coaches scream at kids and kick the dirt in anger, imitating big league managers. They behave as if coaching little league is their livelihood. They lose sight of what's most important at this level. Success is measured not in wins and losses, but in the personal growth and development of young players. Roger Staubach, the former Cowboys quarterback, said, "The only successful youth sports program is the one with the coach who will accept the losing along with the winning, last place in the league along with the first place, and still be able to congratulate his team for their efforts." But how many coaches do that? The behavior of some coaches and moms and dads leaves you wondering who was more mature, the adults or their 10-year-olds. In Alvin, Texas, Nolan Ryan's hometown, a police sergeant who is an assistant coach on a Pony League team for 13 and 14-year-olds was ejected for arguing a close call at first base. He went home, put on his police uniform, returned to the ballpark, and waited for the game to end. When the umpire left in his car, the officer stopped him and gave him a warning ticket, saying the umpire had failed to signal. For this stunt, the officer was demoted and put on 6-month probation. The umpire later said this was all real juvenile, over a baseball game. The policeman coach should have been with me last summer at the Goodwill Baseball Series in Japan. In Asia, respect for the game is very important. Players at the high school level bow to the umpire. They also bow to the field. It is a sacred time and place. Today we hear kids say, "Don't be disrespecting me." If the game of baseball and other sports could talk, they might be saying the same thing. Sadly, we have gotten away from civility and good sportsmanship. A survey of 500 adults in 5 Florida counties showed that 82% believe parents are too aggressive in youth sports. A North Carolina soccer mom was charged with hitting a teenage referee after a game, and a Cleveland father punched a 15-year-old boy on the soccer field because he said his son was being pushed around by the bigger player. In Massachusetts, the fathers of 2 10-year-old hockey players came to blows during a game. One man died from head injuries. In Jupiter, Florida, an athletic association required grown-ups to take a class in how to be good sports. Parents were instructed to watch a 19-minute video on the roles and responsibilities of a parent of a youth athlete. They also signed a code of ethics pledging to behave at sporting events. Americans are obsessed with winning. In our society, if you don't win, then you're a loser. Fans are unforgiving. In Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, sports fans are said to be so tough that when the local teams aren't in town, they go to the airport and boo bad landings. When your favorite team wins, you feel energized. Even the food tastes better. TV announcer John Madden had a good line. Winning is a great deodorant. When I was in graduate school at Arizona State University, social psychology students counted the people wearing caps, sweatshirts, and jerseys bearing the ASU logo after football games. They found that the number of fans wearing the school colors was 30 to 40% higher after the Sun Devils won than after they lost. It is called the BIRG syndrome, basking in reflected glory. We need to redefine winning. Vince Lombardi said winning isn't everything, but making the effort to win is. A winner is one who walks away from competition knowing he has done his personal best regardless of placement, rank, or standing. Being the first to cross the finish line makes you a winner in only one phase of life, said Ralph Boston, a former track and field Olympic gold medal winner. It's what you do after you cross the line that really counts. We also need to examine the mixed messages from professional sports. The National Hockey League claims it doesn't condone violence, but the assaults on some players on the ice would qualify as a crime if they occurred on the street. The National Football League fined former Arizona Cardinals safety Chuck Cecil $30,000 for two acts of flagrant unnecessary roughness involving the use of his helmet against the Washington Redskins. Yet each season, NFL Films splices together a collection of greatest hits and puts them to music. Violence is glamorized. What does the well-played game mean to you? Do you believe it's not cheating if you don't get caught? Is inflicting injury a justifiable part of the game? Your philosophy about sports determines how you play the game. Play hard. Play clean. Play fair. Play your best. Game day. I'm a totally different person on the mound than I am on the street. Nolan Ryan. I won't even call a friend the day of a match. I'm scared of disrupting my concentration. Chris Evert. 5 hours before game time, on a bright late spring afternoon, a solitary figure sat alone in the stands behind first base in Anaheim Stadium. Walking toward him, crossing the manicured grass in right field, I thought how strangely quiet and wonderfully peaceful it seemed, so different from the last time I was in the stadium when the Arizona Cardinals played the then Los Angeles Rams. That memorable Sunday afternoon, the raw roar of the crowd filled the arena. Standing on the sideline, I could hear the grunts, the violent slap of pads, and the voice of Cardinals special teamer Ron Wolfley, black paint smeared under each eye as he came off the field, half-crazed. "Forget the refs," Wolfley screamed. "It's jungle rules out there." Now, several months later, I crossed the ball field and climbed the stadium steps. The man wearing his uniform pants and a T-shirt motioned for me to sit down and join him. Jim LaFever, manager of the Seattle Mariners, sat in silence, taking it all in, the warming sunshine, the perfect geometry of the diamond, the peacefulness. "Mac, listen how quiet it is," LaFever said. "It's like a church, a temple." Sitting there, I thought of Annie Savoy's soliloquy from the movie Bull Durham. "I believe in the Church of Baseball," Annie said. "I've tried all the major religions and most of the minor ones. I've worshipped Buddha, Allah, Brahma, Vishnu, Siva, trees, mushrooms, and Isadora Duncan. I know things, for instance, there are 108 beads in a Catholic rosary, and there are 108 stitches in a baseball. I've tried them all. And the only church that truly feeds the soul, day in and day out, is the Church of Baseball." LaFever gazed at the field, the sweep of empty stands. "This place has got a rhythm to it. It's like a heart beating. Ba-bump." As the manager imitated the sound of a single heartbeat, he closed and opened his right hand. In 45 minutes, our guys will come out for batting practice. Then the vendors will start showing up. Ba-bump. Ba-bump. And the fans will start to arrive. And the other team will come in, and you can see them over there in the dugout. Ba-bump. 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 Jimmy's hand opened and closed. Opened and closed. Faster now. Then the lights go on, and the umpires step onto the field, and they play the national anthem. And in his mind's eye, LeFevre could see it and feel it as surely as he could feel his own pulse. The baseball game, a living, breathing thing. Sports is not life and death, but it has been called war without fatalities. On game day, the heart quickens, and competitive athletes put on their game faces. I have seen it in all sports. With some athletes, it's almost a Jekyll Hyde transformation. Mild-mannered soccer star Mia Hamm described her game day mindset as a warrior mentality. Hank Aaron said the most important thing is how a person prepares to do battle. Everyone gets ready differently. Bo Jackson, the greatest specimen of an athlete I've ever seen, is a soft-spoken fellow. I worked out with him in Phoenix when he was rehabilitating his hip, which he injured playing in the NFL. Jackson described his alter ego as Jason, the indestructible evil force in the Friday the 13th movies. "I refuse to let him out of his box," Jackson said. "Except on Sundays in the fall. I let him out on Sundays when I strap my helmet on and go out and play football." Alex Karras, the former Detroit Lions star, assumed a bigger-than-life identity on game day. He became Paul Bunyan, the giant lumberjack. "I wake up in the hotel room in the morning," Karras said, "and I say to myself, 'Paul, we're going to have ourselves a game this afternoon. We are going to remove the stuffings from people.' I can feel myself inflate." Larry Wilson, former general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, is a quiet, soft-spoken man. Looking at him, one would never guess that he was one of the hardest hitters in the history of professional football. A member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Larry invented the safety blitz. I asked him one day about the fierceness with which he played on Sundays. "On game day, I thought about being on a ranch again, punching cattle," Wilson told me. "If anybody came into the pasture where my cattle were, they were rustling. They were going to get punished, and they wouldn't want to come back again." In the NFL, players review films on Monday. Tuesday is a day off. On Wednesday, the coaches put in the game plan, and by Friday, players mentally begin funneling down. They start eliminating the world around them and focusing on Sunday's approaching kickoff. Some check into a hotel 2 days before the game. They get so keyed up, they don't want to be around their wife and kids. On game day, many professional athletes put on dark glasses and headphones and listen to music to help insulate them from the outside world. Music helps energize or calm them down. The music is as varied as the personalities on a team: jazz, gospel, rock, or rap. Long before viewers turn on their TVs to watch an NFL game, the Warriors are mentally and emotionally girding themselves for battle. Many go into the stadium early and stroll up and down the field, a practice known as grazing. Some find strength and comfort in worship. When the Phoenix Suns played the Chicago Bulls in the NBA Finals, Charles Barkley walked into the Suns' clubhouse and found it empty. He knew his teammates were holding a pregame prayer service in another room. Barkley picked up a felt-tipped marker and wrote his game-day theology on the message board: "God helps those who help themselves." Great athletes strive for balance in their lives. On game day, they find the warrior within. They know when and how to turn it on, and when the game is over, they know how to turn it off. When the lights go on, it's showtime. Be prepared, mind, body, and spirit, to do battle with everything you have, so when the contest is over, you can leave the game behind with no regrets. The mirror test. When the game is over, I just want to look at myself in the mirror win or lose, and know I gave it everything I had. Joe Montana. The softest pillow is a clear conscience. John Wooden. At age 19, the pride of Commerce, Oklahoma, arrived in the big city wearing a Sears Roebuck suit and carrying a cardboard suitcase. He was the natural, in the flesh. He could do it all, and he did. He beat out drag bunts. He snagged Gil Hodges' deep drive to left center field to save Don Larsen's perfect game in the 1956 World Series. He hit a ball 565 feet. He became the greatest switch hitter in the history of baseball. He was number 7 of the Yankees, an American icon, and my boyhood hero. Growing up in New York, I called him Mickey, as if I knew him personally. I imitated his swing from both sides of the plate. Kids coveted and collected his baseball cards. I still have a ball he autographed during his heyday, when fans of all ages worshipped him, before injuries and surgeries broke him down. By any measurement, Mickey Mantle was hugely successful as an athlete. But Mantle was an alcoholic. In the spring of his second season with the Yankees, after his father died of Hodgkin's disease, he started drinking. For 42 years, Mantle blotted himself out with the bottle and abused his body. He failed as a husband and a father. At banquets and in bars, Mantle recited a line that always got a laugh. If I'd known I was going to live this long, I'd taken better care of myself. But the joke wasn't funny. Alcohol ruined his liver. Sadly, Mantle's biggest wins came very late in life. He won his biggest World Series when he checked into the Betty Ford Center and became sober. His most important home run was reconnecting with his family. As Mantle told Sports Illustrated, 15 months before he died of cancer, I'm going to spend more time with all of them, show them and tell them I love them. Serving not only as a performance coach, but also as a personal counselor, I see athletes backstage, unguarded, away from the applause, and out of the white glare of the limelight. Some professional athletes who appear to the public to have the world on a string actually lead unhappy lives. Sports heroes are human too. My boyhood idol had feet of clay. But while Mantle's story is a sad one, I have experienced the joy and satisfaction of watching other sports figures develop and grow as athletes and as people. One of my favorite success stories is Ken Griffey Jr. I've known Ken and his father since 1987. Junior was 17 when the Seattle Mariners chose him from Cincinnati's Moeller High School in the first round of the draft. 2 years later, he made it to the big show. One of the game's greatest players, Griffey passes a test I ask all athletes and will ask you as a listener to take. It's the mirror test. I'm a big believer in the mirror test, said John McKay, the former NFL and college coach. By that I mean that you shouldn't worry about the fans or the press or trying to satisfy the expectations of anyone else. All that matters is if you can look in the mirror and honestly tell the person you see there that you've done your best. Ken Griffey Jr. enjoys the peace of mind that comes with looking at his reflection. As long as I can look in the mirror and know I've done everything I could, he said, that's all I care about. A poem I like says, in part, when you get what you want and you struggle for self, and the world makes you king for a day, just go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that man has to say. You may fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the man in the glass. Harvard researchers collaborated on a project to define what makes a successful life. They produced a list called the 5 L's. Love. For a performer, love is the most basic ingredient for success. Without love for your sport and those people who are important to you, you aren't living. You're only breathing. As Peggy Fleming, the former Olympic champion figure skater said, the most important thing is to love your sport. Never compete just to please someone else. You've got to love what you're doing, hockey great Gordie Howe said. If you love it, you can overcome any handicap or the soreness or all the aches and pains. Listen to former major leaguer Ozzie Smith. Now that I'm out of the game, I know how lucky and blessed I was to play the game that I loved. When he coached for the Chicago Cubs, former star Jimmy Pearsall said the first thing he did before the start of every spring training was to fall in love with the players and the game all over again. Labor. It is said that if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. But there is no shortcut to success. Success is built upon dedication and hard work. Red Auerbach, the legendary Boston Celtics coach, valued work ethic as much as he did talent. He quizzed players about their work habits. How did they respond to coaching? How could they improve upon their talent? Take Larry Bird, Auerbach said. He doesn't have the speed. He doesn't have the height. But he works and works, shoots and shoots. He sets inner goals for everything, for the week, for the month, for the season. Learn. Frank Howard, the ex-big league slugger, said the trouble with baseball is that by the time you learn how to play the game, you can't play it anymore. The same could be said for most other sports. Dan Fouts, the NFL Hall of Fame quarterback, compares an athlete's career with the scales of justice. The left side of the scales is piled full of talent, and the right side is piled with brains. When you begin your career, it's full of the physical and almost void of the mental, Fouts said. Then, as you get further along, the balance shifts to the mental side as your physical abilities deteriorate and your mental capabilities accelerate. The frustrating thing is, you can see your body aging right before your eyes, but you know so much more about the game and how to play it. That's really the way I always felt, especially as I got past the middle of my career. I felt I can't play forever, but I'm learning more every day. I tell young athletes that they should learn from the mistakes of others because they won't have time in life to make them all themselves. Manager Lou Piniella tells players that they have to remember their mistakes and then forget them. Laughter. Don't let competition kill your sense of fun. Part of the music of sports is laughter. Someone asked former manager Whitey Herzog what it takes to be successful in his business. A sense of humor, Whitey replied, and a good bullpen. After an embarrassing loss, John McKay was asked about his team's execution. I'm all for it, the coach deadpanned. During the 1998 season, Mariners pitching coach Brian Price was working with prospect Ivan Montaigne, a hard-throwing but inconsistent right-hander. The Cuban pitcher was wearing a necklace made of bones. When Price ordered Montaigne to take off the good luck charm, the pitcher warned that if he did, it would cause Price's death. I'm not scared of dying, Price replied. I'm scared about getting fired if you pitch bad again. Life is too important to take too seriously. If you learn to laugh at yourself, you will enjoy a lifetime of entertainment. Leave or let go. I know that I'm never as good or as bad as any single performance, Charles Barkley said. I've never believed my critics or my worshippers, and I've always been able to leave the game at the arena. Former manager Sparky Anderson warned that winning can become an unhealthy obsession. The trick is to realize that after giving your best, there's nothing more to give. Win or lose, the game is finished. It's over. It's time to forget and prepare for the next one. Love the game or your work, but don't be married to it. I see the five L's in Ken Griffey Jr.'s life. He loves baseball. He works hard. He's a learner and a student of the game. He has fun. And although he wore a Seattle Mariners uniform for 11 years, he was able to let go and move to Cincinnati and continue his career in the city where he grew up. Success in life is peace of mind, the feeling of having no regrets. It comes from knowing you did your best. everyone eventually leaves the game. Imagine for a moment you're attending a testimonial dinner in honor of your retirement from competition. Maybe you're retiring after high school or college or at the end of a professional career. Maybe you're a weekend warrior. Your friends are at the banquet, and so are all your coaches, former teammates, and those you competed against. Each one stands up and says a few words about your character and how you played the game. What would they say? What would you want them to say? Success comes from the peace of mind of knowing you did your very best on and off the field, as a player and as a person. When you leave the game, how do you want to be remembered? How do you define success? The big win. I'm proof that great things can happen to ordinary people if they work hard and never give up. Oral Hershiser. I may win and I may lose, but I will never be defeated. Emmett Smith. Hobbled by foot injuries, Mark McGwire missed most of the 1993 and 94 seasons. Each of those years, he hit only 9 home runs. When the slugger who then played for Oakland suffered another setback the next spring, he wondered if the baseball gods were trying to tell him something. Frustrated and worried about his future, he turned to family and friends for advice. They urged him to give it at least one more year. Imagine if McGwire had quit baseball. Think of what he and all of us would have missed. McGwire would never have hit home run number 61 on his father's 61st birthday and written his name alongside Roger Maris in the record book. He never would have shared this memory with the St. Louis Cardinals bat boy, McGwire's 10-year-old son. As Big Mac circled the bases, Matt McGwire stood at the plate, waiting to be swept up in his dad's embrace. What a moment. 3 generations joined by 1 home run. If McGwire had quit, he never would have hit number 62, a feat that thrilled him so much that he forgot the first rule of Little League, touch them all. In his excitement, McGwire missed first base. He came back, touched first, touched second, touched third, and touched home. The night McGwire took ownership of the most prestigious record in sports, he touched everything and everyone. If McGwire had quit, baseball's new Man of Steel wouldn't have hit 5 home runs during the last 44 hours of the magical 1998 season. Before his last at-bat, he stood in the on-deck circle, eyes closed, absorbing the energy. Then he stepped to the plate and belted number 70. They say that 70th baseball is worth thousands, but how can you put a price tag on that heroic summer and the impact it made upon the game, the fans, and the country? McGwire said it all. I can't believe it. Can you? Michael Jordan's goal as a teenager was to make his high school basketball team. He can still see himself back then as an anxious sophomore on the long-awaited day when his coach posted the typewritten sheet in the gym. The students who made the team were listed, while those left off had been cut. Jordan's eyes searched the list. He ran a finger down the alphabetical column of names. His wasn't there. His heart sank. After school that day, Jordan went home, shut himself in his room, and cried hard tears. Thankfully, determination overcame disappointment. The skinny youth refused to accept he wasn't good enough. He didn't give up. If he had, we wouldn't have experienced the pleasure of watching the greatest performer in basketball history win NBA championships and MVP titles and lead a dream team to gold on the Olympic stage. Lance Armstrong remembers the moment doctors gave him the grim news. In 1996, the cyclist was told he had testicular cancer. The disease had spread to his abdomen, brain, and lungs. The first thing I thought was, oh no, my career is in jeopardy, Armstrong told friends. And then they kept finding new problems. I forgot about my career. I was more worried about making it to my next birthday. Armstrong underwent 4 rounds of chemotherapy and had surgery to remove brain tumors. Remarkably, less than 3 years after doctors gave him only a 40% chance to live, the 27-year-old Texan was pedaling fiercely across France, over the Alps, and across the Pyrenees. Bent over his two-wheeler, the American led the way on the 2,286-mile journey over some of Europe's most extreme terrain. Uphill and down dale, in sunshine and in rain. Some climbs were as steep as the steps of a football stadium. He ate on the go. He sipped liquids like a hummingbird from a feeder. Fueled by willpower, he was a sewing machine, burning 6,000 calories a day. The Tour de France is one of the world's greatest tests of human endurance. The race has been compared with running a marathon every day for 20 days. Lance Armstrong doesn't need a trophy to prove he is a winner, but he received one in 1999 anyway. On the last day of the race, he arrived in Paris, draped in an American flag and embraced by cheers. The winner. But more than that, Armstrong is an inspiring symbol of survival. His is a life-affirming story, and continues to be. Lance repeated the feat the following year. In working with athletes and all performers, I remind them that we don't know what the future holds for any of us. So why not act as if you're going to have a great future? Set your goals. Do the work. While positive thinking doesn't always work, negative thinking, unfortunately, almost always does. Throughout this book, we have talked about some of the world's best-known athletes. Most champions, however, aren't famous. They aren't written about in Sports Illustrated or interviewed on ESPN. Instead, they are all around us. They are everywhere we look. Ida Dotson was 2 years old before her parents suspected something was wrong. Tests confirmed that the child from Tombstone, Arizona, was hearing impaired. When Ida turned 4, her mother and father drove to Tucson and placed her in the Arizona School for the Deaf and Blind. She spent 10 years at the school. Her sophomore year, Ida said she wanted to go to public school, so she enrolled at Tombstone High. She didn't know how to communicate with the other 300 students. They didn't know sign language. Ida worried if they would accept her. They did. She couldn't hear the band play or the cheerleaders cheer. But if being deaf is a handicap, no one told Ida. She joined the girls' varsity basketball team and worked hard. Wearing a hearing aid that allows her to detect the vibrations from the referee's whistle, she became the school's top scorer and team leader. In her senior year, Ida took Tombstone to the semifinals in the state playoffs. The last lesson is the most important. Don't let your fears get in the way of your dreams. Don't let what you can't do interfere with what you can do. The greatest victory is the victory over ourselves. Remember, it's always too soon to quit. This is Kevin Young for McGraw-Hill Professional. Thank you for listening. This audiobook is copyrighted in 2014 in the name of Gary Mack and is based upon the book Mind Gym by Gary Mack with David Cass Stevens, copyrighted in 2001 by Gary Mack. To purchase other McGraw-Hill Professional audiobooks, please visit Amazon.com. To purchase other McGraw-Hill Professional products, please visit our website at www.mhprofessional.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.